All right, Jerosai, good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's shiur. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for Adar Beis, the Schwartzbaum family, for dedicating all the Shuman Drushos this month in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir, Zichron Livracha, Leah Sol in the schus of her daughter Ilana Bas Esther, successful surgery, and a complete refuah shlema. Thank you so much. And for the return of Eretz Hashem of all of our hostages, Maya Hoffman, Ari, thank you. I'm Maya Hoffman in memory of her father, Reuven Ben Emmanuel, and in the merit of Hatzlacha, health and joy for her entire family. Yoel and Sarah Kelman, in honor of the birth of their son, and in memory of Staff Sergeant David Sassoon, Hashem Yikom Damo, age 21, who was killed fighting in Gaza on March 6th, 2024. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos Lavan Aliyah, the families in Nechama, our hostages will Emirat Hashem come home B'Shalom and B'Karov, and our soldiers will Emirat Hashem be successful in all of their endeavors. We'll say with that, let us begin. We have a lot to do today. Baruch Hashem, today's daf is Daf Chof. And we are picking up Emirat Hashem on Yud Tes Amud Beis 19b. We left off with Maskif Lo Rav Zvid, which is... Oh, actually, we got a little bit further than that. That's the truth. But let's just pick up there, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from before it gets wide. Don't get excited. That's the bottom of the page. From before it gets wide. So the Gemara says, so remember again, we're trying to reconcile. We're in that really riveting sugya. It really is riveting about if you lose a shtar, essentially you lose a document, under what circumstances can that document be returned versus when can't it be returned? When are we concerned that perhaps returning it to the wrong person could potentially go ahead and allow for exploitation of that document versus when are the effects of return relatively innocuous and therefore again could be returned? Kind of mix in there about what happens when the parties involved maybe admit that the document, remember, we'll say there's a side discussion over here, kind of, or like a side consideration about, you know, I'll give you a simple example. We're often focused in the event that I'm walking down the street, I find the loan document. So the Shiloh right, says, Reuven lent $1,000 to Shimon. So the question, of course, is who do I give it back to? If I give it back to Reuven, the lender, then that could potentially allow Reuven to recollect the loan that's already been paid off. I give it back to Shimon. That could allow Shimon to essentially not pay back a debt that he should have had to pay. There's another second consideration, or I should say third consideration. It was the third consideration. Maybe this document was drafted with the anticipation of lending money, but what? Was never executed. Right? In which case, again, lo hayu dvar milam. So there's all this stuff swirling around. So we had, in yesterday's staff, we pretty much spent the majority of Amud Beis going ahead and focusing on the machlokes between the Braisa and the Mishnah. So now, Maskif Lo Rav Zvid, Avaha Idi, Daitikos Katoni. But I will say again, we tried to set it up as one case of talking about the gift of a Shchiv Meira, the gift of a healthy person. Avat Rav Zvid said both of the Braisa and the Mishnah are talking about Daitikos, which are both speaking about deathbed gifts that are committed to writing, to which the Gemara says, Ela Amrav Zvid Hab Vishchimira. Sorry, Hava Hab Vishchimira. Both are dealing with cases of Vishchimira, Velo Kashya, Habe Vahabebre. This is actually where we left off. One case is talking about where the Shchimira himself is claiming that, or is making the claim, and one is where the son of the Shchimira, i.e., the Shchimira died, and ultimately, again, the son of the Shchimira is making the claim. We'll see, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Rashi's kind of towards the top. It's about 10 lines in from where the lines get short to the top of Rashi. So we'll say, so one is talking about a situation where the Shchimira himself is alive, right? And therefore, again, the Shchimira says, yes, I wrote this document, and let's say the Shchimira's name is Reuven, right? So Reuven says, yes, I wrote this document, give it to Shimon. Ha bibrei, Rashi says, Shemes nicholyo va'amr v'zeh b'no omer hachziro. Shabbos says, so when the Shchimira himself is saying, yes, I, Reuven, the Shchimira, wrote this gift over to Shimon. So ultimately, again, then we return the document. But when the Shchimira died, and now it's his son, and his son is saying, my father wrote this property over to Shimon, return the document over to Shimon, that's when we don't listen. Now what's going on over here? So the Gemara says, listen to this. Masnitzin de ka'amer tenu, nosnin, bididei. So therefore, we'll say the Mishnah, which says that when it comes to Daitikos, if the Shchimira himself says give it to the person named in the shtar. We listen. Why? So the Gemara says, Dibar mehadahu. Because at the end of the day, we will say the Shchiv Meira, while he's still alive, has the ability to gift or re-gift to as many people who he wants. We'll say, I don't know if I made this point clearly yesterday. Right? Reuven's a Shchiv Meira. Reuven's a Shchiv Meira, right? So Reuven's on his deathbed. Reuven decides on his deathbed, remember, we'll say there is a power that a Shchiv Meira has on his deathbed to convey property ownership in ways that you can't do in any other places in Halacha, right? There's a concept of divrei Shchiv Meira kiksuvin dechimsurin dami. The words of a Shchiv Meira are as if they are committed to writing and given over. In other words, normally in Halacha, right? If I say I would like to convey this iPhone over to Reuven, so again I will say saying you want to convey it doesn't do anything. You need all types of mechanisms of kinyanim. Shchiv Meira is the exception to this rule. Whatever Shchiv Meira says is done. So now watch this. When Reuven, the Shchiv Meira says, I want to give property over to Shimon. Again, Reuven has the ability to give it to Shimon. I both say, now let's say that's on Tuesday. Let's say Wednesday, Reuven's like, you know what? Shimon didn't even come to visit me today. He didn't call once, not a text message. I'm giving it to Levi. Does Reuven have the ability to do that? Yes. In other words, as long as Reuven's not dead, he could change his mind as many times. So I will say, it's a good muster in life in general. As long as you're not dead, you can change your mind. Right? It's never too late to change as long as you are breathing. Once you're dead, that's it. Kind of no backsies. But at the end of the day, so therefore, again, when Reuven is alive, even as a Shchiv Meira, it's very important. Because remember, why is Reuven able to change his mind? Why is he able to change his mind? Because remember, the whole chap of a Shchiv Meira is, when is this gift triggered? When is it triggered? Upon death. So therefore, he could change his mind about who the recipient is going to be as many times. Now, I will say, obviously, I want to be clear. If Reuven explicitly conveys ownership to Shimon, using a formal kinyan, and does this during his lifetime, then of course it belongs to Shimon. But we're assuming we're talking about over here deathbed gifts. The way deathbed gifts work is they're triggered, or they actualize upon death. So therefore, Reuven can change his mind as many times as he wants. So the Gemara says, "Devar mehadarhu, tamiran inami yavale neshachrina." Because what we say like this? So watch this. Reuven wrote a daitiki, right? So Reuven wrote in a document, "I am giving a deathbed gift to Shimon," which essentially means that upon my death, Shimon is going to acquire field A. So now, what happens? I'm walking down the street. I find this document, this deathbed document. I say, "Reuven, did you write this?" Reuven says, yes, I wrote it and give it to Shimon. The halacha is, we give it to Shimon. Why? Because there's no loss. There's no potential exploitation over here. Meaning what? What do we have to be concerned about? That maybe Reuven gave it to Shimon and then Reuven gave it to someone else? Or Reuven gave it to someone else then Reuven gave it to Shimon? Reuven could change his mind a million times, as many times as he wants. He goes on, he says, let's say Reuven went ahead and gifted it to someone else. Les bapsida de kama ubasra basra zachi da hadrebe mikama. So we'll say, because at the end of the day, let's say Reuven says, give it back to Shimon. Let's say it turns out that there's another guy, Levi. And Levi produces a document, a daitiki, a deathbed document, right, that is dated later than Shimon's. Who gets the field? Levi. Because so essentially whoever has the latest dated deathbed gift document is the one who's going to be the recipient. So essentially the Gemara says there's no harm, right? There's nothing bad that could come from us returning the document to the person named in the document, all assuming that Reuven, the Shchiv Meira, the conveyor, agrees that he wrote this document and wants it returned. Beautiful. However, ki katani bebraisa, afa pisha shnei modum lo yaksra, lo lo zeh, lo lo zeh. But I'm also saying the braisa where it says that if I'm walking down the street and I find a daitiki, I find a deathbed document, and it says that Reuven gave over a deathbed gift to Shimon, even if Reuven and Shimon agree. Now, listen, now watch this, fast forward a little bit. In this case over here, Reuven died. So I find this document, and who do I go over? I go over to Reuven's son. We'll just call him son, right? I go over to Reuven's, because already you Shimon, right? So I go over to Reuven's son, and I say, son, I found this document that Reuven, your father, went ahead and wrote. Oh, and the son says, yes, that is correct. Yeah, I agree to it. And Shimon named in the document agrees to it. You still can't, you can't give it back in that case to either party. Why? So the Gemara says, Babari darminon, duma kasav avuola hai ve'im lach v'lo yavene hile. Because I said, what am I concerned about? What do I have to be concerned about in the case? I have to be concerned about the following scenario. Maybe Reuven wrote a daitiki to Shimon. And then what happened? He decided not to give it to Shimon. He decided not to give it to Shimon, right? V'lo yavene hile, ubasar demei savua, and was saying after Reuven died, kasav ihu le'ine shachrina, the son ended up conveying property to another person. V'yavile, so we'll say then let's say after Reuven the father died, so son decided to give the property to Levi, and he wrote a document to Levi saying this. And now afterwards, son has giver's remorse that he ever gave the property to Levi. So what is Savra Mehadr Lamatzina Hadrin? I will say second wide line, 19b. So now son understands I can't retract from Levi because it's already been given to him. But what will I do? So the Gemara says, Emar Luhu Da Abba Yavile Lahai Vinasnu Leik Siva Venezel Venefak Minei. So So what happens? So now son has remorse that he gave over the property or sold the property or gifted the property to Levi. So he says like this, you know what? I remember that my father wrote a document, a deathbed document, giving over property to Shimon. He never actually gave it to Shimon. But now, let's go ahead. Now that someone found this document, so I'll get into cahoots with Shimon. Son and Shimon will get into cahoots. Let's extract the property from Levi, give it to Shimon. And now son says to Shimon, you and I will split it 50-50. Split it 50-50. Hilchach amin alei. Therefore we say to the son, Anon haik sava lo yahavin alei. Lahai. So therefore, again, I will say, when I find this document, we say to son, I'm sorry, we can't go ahead and give this over. We can't give this over ultimately again to. We can't give this over to Shimon. The Dilma, Michtav Kasvi Avua, Meyav Lo Yavale. Because I have to be concerned that maybe your father Reuven wrote this document to Shimon, but never actually delivered it. So the Gemara says, Yavit Atle Inishachrina. And now we're concerned that son, you gave this property to someone else, i.e. to Levi, think a hadraspe, and you have giver's remorse. So, and therefore, again, that you're trying to maybe orchestrate some type of fictitious reality over here because you're in cahoots with Levi in order to extract it from Shimon. So you say to the son like this, if you're telling the truth, that your father actually went ahead and gave the property to Shimon, right? And you never engaged in any other transaction with this property. Zil at hashta kasav lishtar achrina. So very simple. Son, write a new document to Shimon right now. Write a new document to Shimon right now. De'ian nami lo yavile avua de kasvi atlina shachrina. Les pe psida de kama ubasra kama zachi. Because this way, again, if the property really does belong to Shimon, right? So even if halacha lamaisa, again, you wrote it to someone else, ultimately, again, that person, Shimon, will have a pre-existing shtar that pre-exists your shtar that you gave to Levi. So in other words, we'll say, so it's actually so kind of, let me tell you, it's outside. So Gemara essentially says two different cases, right? In both cases, you have Reuven and Shemira giving over property over to Levi, to Shimon, I'm sorry, the recipient. So in case number one, which is the case of the Mishnah, so the Reuven is alive. I'm walking down the street, find the shtar. Both Reuven and Shimon agree that Lamaisa, this transaction occurred, I give it back, right? Why? Because we'll say there's no loss. Let's play this out. What do I have to potentially be concerned about? That maybe after Reuven gave this shtar to Shimon, right? Maybe Reuven changed his mind and decided, you know what? I'm not giving the property to Shimon, I'm giving it to Levi. Does Reuven have the ability to do that? Does he have the ability to change his mind? Absolutely. You always have the power to change your mind up until the day that you die. So therefore, again, so what's the worst case scenario? Someone else is going to come along with a document that's dated later on. Fine. So they'll have the stronger claim. But where both Reuven and Shimon are agreeing that this transaction occurred, no problem giving it back. Case number two of the Braisa, on both sides, case number two of the Braisa is where I'm walking down the street, I find this document that says Reuven gave a deathbed gift to Shimon, but Reuven's dead. Reuven's dead. Who is alive? Reuven's son. I go over to son, and again, in this case, son says, yes, my father did this, give the document back to Shimon. In this case, I will say we have to be concerned for some level of collusion between son and Shimon. What we're concerned about in this case over here is that maybe Reuven wrote this document, never actually delivered it, so there was never a deathbed gift. Son, after the death of the father, son, the inheritor, gave property to Levi. Son regrets that he gave it to Levi, but can't extract it anymore. So now, when I find this document, this is a golden opportunity for son to extract the property from Levi, go ahead and go to Shimon, get into cahoots with Shimon, and split it 50-50 with Shimon. So that, because we have that concern, we can't give back the document to Shimon. So instead, what we tell son is, listen, if you're telling the truth, you just write a new document to Shimon, conveying ownership over to Shimon, and Shalom Yisrael. Nothing's going to happen. And assuming you're telling the truth, that you did not subsequently sell or give this property to anyone else, we shouldn't run into any issues over here. Now, I say, you think to yourself, this is such a far-fetched thing you're concerned about. That son gave it to Levi, and now he regrets giving it to Levi, and now he's trying to use this document that was never executed to extract it from Levi. You're right, it is a little far-fetched. But I will say, but remember, what's the problem over here? When you find the document lying in the street, the effectiveness, right, of this document has been compromised. So therefore, what we see in this case over here is you have to begin to be choshesh for scenarios that you would not normally need to be choshesh for. That's what's happening over here. So I will say, that's the resolution, right? That's how we resolve seemingly contradictory stances of the Mishnah and the Braisa, talking about two different cases. Beautiful. Tarabaram, here we go. Matzah shover. Listen to this. Let's say you find a receipt. You find the receipt. Now, what's the case of the receipt? So remember again, when, right, the couple is married, the woman has a ksuva. Couple gets divorced. So a husband is obligated to pay his wife the ksuva. After he pays, she gets a shover. Right? Ultimately, again, she gets a receipt. So now what happens, Bosai? You find out the husband normally writes, she writes that receipt to the husband. So now in this case, interestingly enough, I'm walking down the street and I find the receipt. So Rabbi says, so now what do I do? So what's the halacha? So bizman she'isha mode yachsu labal. So if the woman, right, Rachel, we'll call her Rachel, Reuven's married to Rachel. So if Rachel admits that, yes, this is my shover, this is my receipt, my husband paid me my ksuva, so ultimately give it back to the husband. Perfect. Eina isha moda. What happens if the woman does not admit? Let's say the woman said, you know what? My husband never paid me my ksuva, right? And therefore, again, I wrote this receipt in anticipation of being paid, but I was never actually paid. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, don't return it to my husband. So what's the halacha? Lo yachzer lo lazeh v'lo lazeh. So we'll say, if she is not moda, then we don't return it to either party. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Bizman she'isha moda mias yachzer lebal." So we'll say, so again, if the woman, let's go back to the first case, right? So I'm walking down the street, I find this receipt that says, "I, Rachel, have received payment for my ksuva from my husband, Reuven." So now what's the halacha? If the woman is moda, that indeed she wrote this receipt and she received payment, we give it back to the husband. So the Gemara says, "I v'leichosh duma kasva litin benisan." This goes back, harkens back to yesterday's daf. So shover, a receipt, like any document, is dated. So why aren't we concerned that maybe, right, the date on this document is Nisan, but maybe the woman pre-wrote this, right, in anticipation of payment of her ksuba. She pre-wrote this, dated it in Nisan, but it wasn't actually paid or wasn't actually delivered until Tishrei. And what do I have to be concerned about? Va'azal zambanta l'ksuvasa b'tovasa naminisim atishrei. Meanwhile, we'll say, what happened? She sold her ksuva. So she wrote this receipt in Nisan. But she wasn't actually paid her ksuva until Tishrei. So meanwhile, between Nisan and Tishrei, she sold her ksuva, right? Which, by the way, Omen has the ability to remember again, a woman can sell her ksuva. What do we call that? What is she selling? What is she selling? She's selling a future. But she's selling a future option. Now, obviously, if you're buying a ksuva, you're buying it at a deep discount, right? Because remember, again, you're only getting paid out in the event that what? Either, again, husband dies or they get divorced. So I would imagine, unless you know that, right? Now, if you know a couple with terrible shalom bias, you might say that's a pretty solid investment, right? But otherwise, like Lamanisa, you're buying it at a deep discount. So what happens? Well, so in this case, So she wrote the shover in Nisan. But it wasn't actually, the ksuva wasn't paid until Tishrei. So between Nisan and Tishrei, what did she do? She sold her ksuva. So now what's going to happen? Right? Nisan and Tishrei. Umapik leil shon. So now fast forward a little bit. So now she sold her ksuva, let's call it in Sivan. In Sivan, right? It was dated in Nisan. She said, now, meanwhile, the ksuva itself wasn't paid until Tishrei. So now Tishrei comes. She gets payment for her ksuva. Husband gets the receipt. The receipt says that the ksuva was paid as of when? As of Nisan. She sold her ksuva in Sivan. So now what could he do? He could exploit this situation, go back and extract anything that was sold, because he could say, look, my wife sold her ksuva, but she didn't really have the right to do that because the ksuva was already paid back in Nisan. Vaharaya, I have a document that says, I have a receipt that says that says the ksuva was paid already back in Nisan. So the Gemara says, "Umapik lei the shover d'ksiv b'nisan va'asav mitrof l'kucho shalok kedin," and the husband could extract sold properties inappropriately. Amar Rava, Rava says, "We'll say tap of chaf shma mina isa l'dishmuel." So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here, interestingly enough, that we hold of the position of Shmuel. So we'll say, this is actually, we've had this before, and it's actually quite riveting. The Amar Shmuel, Hamoch Eshtarchov L'Chavero. We'll say, listen to this. If you sell a loan document or a note of indebtedness to someone else, the Chazar Ummachlo, and I'll both say, the creditor subsequently forgives the debt after the debt has been sold, what's the halacha? Machol. Ultimately, again, the debt is forgiven. Vafilu yoresh machal, and even an inheritor has the ability to forgive a debt once it's been sold. So we'll say, we've seen this concept of Shmuel a number of times before, and it's really quite fascinating. Essentially, what Shmuel says is like this: a creditor always retains the ability to forgive a debt, even if the debt has been sold. That power of forgiveness is always his. Even an inheritor, right? So in other words, Reuven lent money to Shimon, then subsequently sold the debt, right? Let's say Reuven sold the note. He sold the loan to Levi. Reuven always retains the ability to go ahead and forgive the debt even after it's resolved. Not only that, when Reuven dies, and now Reuven's heir, son, inherits the debt, Halacha l'maisa, inheritor retains the ability to forgive the debt. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Isla de Shmuel de Amar Hamocher Shtarchov lechavero." Right, if a person sells a loan to his friend, the Chazar Hamocher Azeh Umachlo, and now the seller, who's also the original creditor, forgives the debt. Machol hu etza halova hilchach im Machra zuk suvasa beiar dahinu Shtarchov vechazar machalasa lebal betishrei machol v'shapir tarav bal. So we'll say, the reason why this is appropriate over here is because halacha l'maisa, the woman is the creditor. So therefore, if halacha l'maisa, she sells her ksuv, right? So now she wrote the shover, she wrote the receipt back in Nisan, right? It was dated Nisan. Wasn't delivered until Tishrei. Let's say she goes in and she sells off ksuva property in Iyar. And now ultimately, again, Suva's paid back or later on in Tishrei. She has the ability to forgive that Suva debt to her husband. And in essence, the husband has the ability to collect back from property that she sold in Iyar. Based on the dynamic of Shmuel, who holds that a creditor always has the ability to forgive the debt even after the debt has been sold. Pretty incredible. The truth is, even if you don't hold of Shmuel, this case still works. How so? How come I ask? You know, what's the case over here? We're talking about a case, ultimately, again, over here, where she has a actual ksuva. Rashi says over here, we're talking about a case where she has the actual physical ksuva. If she had sold the ksuva, then what? We'll say, apparently, when a woman sells her ksuva, what does the buyer get? The actual ksuva itself. Therefore, we're talking about a case where she has the actual ksuva document. If she has the actual ksuva document, that shows that halacha l'maisa, she never sold the ksuva. Incredible. For Rava, Amar Rava says, imi shum shtar ksuva, if that's the best that she got, that she has the document itself, and therefore we're not concerned that she sold it, chashin l'shtei ksuvos. What about the fact that maybe there are two ksuvos? Rabbi says, chada l'shtei ksuvos lo chashin. Rabbi says, number one, a man doesn't write two ksuvos. That's number one. Va'od shover bizmano tarif. And furthermore, again, a shover has the ability to collect based on the date inside of it. So the Gemara says, Abai letame da'amar edav bechasumen bechasumav zachelo. Abai is, of course, according to his reasoning, because Abai says, essentially, a shover is effective as of the date that it is written, because once witnesses sign on it, they have the ability to acquire that ksuva for the woman as of that date. Reminiscent, Rabbi Osai, of what? Of the Shtar Shichrur that we saw in yesterday's daf. Okay, incredible. So Rabbi Osai, bottom line, halacha l'maaseh in this case, is that if I am walking down the street and I find a receipt that says, Reuven paid Rachel her ksuva. So again, if the woman doesn't admit, like if the woman says, no, I'm sorry, I never got paid for my ksuva, then we don't return that receipt to either party. But if the woman admits, right, Rachel admits, yes, I got paid my ksuva, then halacha l'maisa, we return the receipt to the husband. We have to be concerned for all different types of things. So the Gemara works that through. There's nothing to be concerned about. There's no real way to exploit this situation. And therefore, as long as Rachel is admitting that the ksuva was paid, we return the receipt back to Reuven, the husband. Beautiful. All right, we'll say weiter. Mishnah. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bedvaro. Here we go. Matzah igros shum. Vigros mazah. So we'll say, now watch this. Take a look at Rashi. A lot of interesting keys here. And I will say, now these are all documents. These are all documents that would normally be executed by a Beis Din. So we'll say, so we find igros shum. Look at Rashi. Igros shum. Shamu Beis Din nechse lovet lemalva bezocho. So we'll say, an igros shum, a document evaluation, is a document, right? Reuven lent money to Shimon. So Shimon owes money to Reuven. So both say, so sometimes what Beis Din would do is, especially if Shimon doesn't have any liquid assets, so Beis Din would valuate Shimon's property for Reuven so that Reuven knows what he has the ability to collect. That's a shum. Shum is evaluation. So Matzah Igros Shum, I find the document evaluation. The Igros Mazon, we'll say Igros Mazon is a document in which a man agrees, right? Reuven's married to Rachel. Rachel has daughters, let's say, from a different marriage. Reuven agrees to go ahead and support the daughters of Shimon. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, sorry. Daughter, wrong union. Right? So again, so Reuven, right? Reuven agrees to support the daughters of Rachel. That's called Igros Mazon. Shtari Chalitza. Pretty self-explanatory. It's chalitza document. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, chalitza, like a get, would often be recorded in a document. Shtari chalitza, umi'unin, mi'un, about saying again, what's mi'un? Mi'un is, remember again, of a mother or a brother, older brother, marry off a girl. There's the ability to do that. That creates a rabbinic marriage because it's only a rabbinic, where the girl's a katana, right? Rabbinic marriage, she has the ability to refuse the marriage. Once she refuses it, the marriage is dissolved. That's called mi'un. We would record mi'un in a document. Ushtari berarin, we'll discuss what shtar berarin is. Kol ma'aseh, so we'll say, so these are all documents that were executed by a Beis Din. In other words, private people don't write these documents. Only a Beis Din writes these documents. So I'm walking down the street. I find this document. Harezi Yachzer. I return it. Rashi says over here, both say first of the wide lines in Rashi. Harezi Yachzer. Deleka lemechash l'shem animloch. Da Beis Din lo kasvum ela bidavar makuyam. Ulepiron amileka lemechash. So both say, listen to this. What would I be concerned about in this case? That maybe Beis Din wrote these documents, but they were never executed. So Rabbi Osai, apparently when it comes to Beis Din, that doesn't happen. Beis Din only writes a document if the document is going to be executed. So therefore, again, if you found this, then Lamaisa, again, that means that this is a bona fide document. Beis Din doesn't write it unless it's going to get done. And therefore, Alocha Lamaisa, you could return it. Matzah bechafisa b'daluskama. So Rabbi Osai, watch this. Let's say I'm walking down the street and I find a document and it's in a container. Chafisa deluskama are different types of containers. Some of this in the Gemara. Right? So I find a document, right? The message in a bottle, right? I find a document in a container. So what's the halacha? Or the Gemara says, tachrich shel shtaros, o aguda shel shtaros. Or I will say, I find a tachrich or an aguda. Again, we'll discuss what those means as well. But let's say, again, I find essentially like a roll of documents or a pile of documents. What's the halacha? Harizi yachzir. Ultimately, again, these should be returned. Now, what's the logic over here? Rashi says, Harizi yachzir. To davar sheish bo simenhu kidim efarish bigemara. Shakli simen shkishiyomru abaylim bekli kach vakach matzaz osam. So we'll say, these look like documents that were specifically placed in an order. In other words, so when you find documents in a kli, or you find documents rolled up together, so this is not random. So because it's not random, again, this is a simen. In other words, so someone could identify these documents, and therefore, again, they're returned, provided that someone gives the simen. Okay, we'll discuss greater depth. V'kama aguda shel shtaros. By the way, what is considered to be a bundle of shtaros? Shlosha kshurin zeh bazeh. Three shtaros tied to each other. Right, so if you find three documents tied to each other, this obviously, Rabbi said, this is not a random placement. Because it's not a random placement, if someone is able to give the simen, someone is able to give the identifying mark, then Enochinami, you would return the documents. Listen to this, very interesting case. Echad halove mishlosha, yachzir lalove. Shabbos saying, now watch this. If you find, let's say, three documents, right? Three documents bundled together, right? And a document one says, Ruvain borrowed money from Shimon. Document two says, Ruvain borrowed money from Levi. And document three says, Ruvain borrowed money from Yehuda. Right? So three loan documents with the same borrower named. What's the halacha? Yachzir lalove. We give those back to Ruvain. Right? Because they both say, it would be too haphazard to think. So you will say, because there are two scenarios now when you find this. What are the two scenarios? Scenario number one is that Shimon lost his document, Levi lost his document, and Yehuda lost his document. Right? Or possibility two is that what? Reuven lost three documents. So I will say, because you have all three of them bundled together, the statistical probability is that what? Is that it's Reuven, the borrower, who had all of his loan documents bundled together and lost them, rather than saying that the creditors each lost their independent document. Therefore, we give this back to Reuven. Interesting. We give it back to Reuven. Shlosha lovim mina echad yachzir lamalva. So we'll say, what happens if the reverse case, right? I have one document that says Reuven lent money to Shimon, another document that says Reuven lent money to Levi, and a third document that says Reuven lent money to Yehuda. So we'll say, so once again, it could be that Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda each lost their respective loan documents, or the other possibility is that what? Is that Reuven, the lender, had all of his loan documents bundled together. So we'll say, so therefore, the greater statistical probability is that Reuven, the lender, had all of his documents together. Therefore, we give the documents back to Reuven, the lender. Incredible. Masashtar ben shtarosav, ve'inu yodea mativo. So Rabbo said, this is an interesting case. Right? You know that day comes along where you finally go through the papers on your desk. Right? Right? That much long-awaited, much anticipated day. You go through that, you go through the papers, and you find the document on the desk, and you don't know what it is. What does that mean? I don't know what it is. So I will say, so now watch this. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Vinio de Mativo, Etzlo imalove efkido etzlo, ohamalve oshem. I will say, watch this. This is fascinating. I'm going through my papers, and I find on my desk a loan document that says, Reuven lent money to Shimon. I will say, so now what's my problem? I don't remember. Did Reuven, the lender, give me this just to hold on to? So that when Reuven's ready to collect the money from Shimon, he has the ability to do so? Or did Shimon pay off the debt and ask me to hold on to this as a receipt? And I have no recollection. I know Reuven, I know Shimon. I just have no recollection as to why this document is on my desk. So what do I do with it? So I will say, by the way, this is a mefurash raya that sometimes you don't have to clean things up, right? Sometimes you are allowed to leave things on your desk. Right? This is great. So the next time your wife asks you to please clean up your desk, I say, listen, it's a Mishnah. Some things you have to leave at Shiyavo Elio. Right? Sometimes the garage has to look this way at Shiyavo Elio. Right? It's not me. It's not me. It's the Mishnah. Right? So I'll say, so incredible. So again, I can't do anything with this document because Lamaisa, I don't know who to give it back to. I just don't know who to give it back to. Incredible. Emyeshimon Symphonos. Yasamash Symphonos. I will say, if I have in my possession Symphonos. Now, what are Symphonos? Rashi says, Mish Iman Symphonos, Mili Mili Katane Emotzi Mishtarosov, Shover, Shinichtel Achem Mishtarosov. I will say, a Symphon, we're going to see, is a receipt. If I find receipts, And I will say again, sometimes you have a receipt and it's not clear. Again, is this a receipt because actually the debt was paid? Was it just proactively written but never executed? If you find the receipt, we assume that if a receipt was written, that is an accurate portrayal of what occurred. And therefore, again, we act based on what is written inside of the receipt. Rashi says, Yasema shebesimfon, vashtar becheskas parua. So the document is assumed to be repaid. V'yafapi shaylashover hazeh lios munach biadalove. So we'll say, watch this. And then I will say, this is a different case. So normally we would say a receipt. I will say, who should be in possession of a receipt? Who should be in possession of a receipt? Who should be in possession of a receipt? The borrower. The borrower, right? Because again, that receipt ensures that the lender can't. So I'll say, even though normally a receipt should be in the possession of the borrower, if we find what looks like a properly executed receipt, we assume that is valid. It's kasher and yasher, and that's ultimately, again, we go based on that. Aye, but the lover, the borrower should have had it. It's true, but the maestro, maybe the borrower entrusted me. So essentially, the Mishnah saying is, whenever you see what looks like a properly executed receipt, we go, we assume that that is authoritative. All right, Rabbi say, a lot to unpack over here. Here we go. Gemara, my shtari beirin. Rabbi say, what is a shtar beirin? What is that? So, achet targimu shtari ta'anasa. So, Rabbi say, here, in Babel, they said, shtar beirin, Rabbi say, is a document which records the arguments of the respective parties. Okay. Rabbi Yirmiyah Omer, zeb borer lo echa v'zeb borer lo echa. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, no. But say, shtar beirin is a document which outlines, we'll say, when you go to Beis Din, technically speaking, each side has a right to choose a dayan, right? And then often those two dayanim choose a third. So that document where they would record judicial selection, that was called the shtar beirin. Okay. Fine. The Chomaisa Beis Din Arzay Yachzer. I must say, in general, whatever document you find executed by Beis Din, you go ahead and you return. So the Gemara says, "Hahu Gita." Listen to this. "Hahu Gita Dishtachach Beidina Derav Huna." Taviksiv Be Beshviri Masa Da Arachis Nara. So I say. So what happened? One time there was a guy bringing a get, a shaliach, and he lost it, and they found a get inside of the Beis Din of Rav Huna, and the get was written that, like the location, Bishvirei Masa Da'arachis Nara, in the city of Shviri that sits on the river Rachis, right, the Rachis River. Well, so we saw this, remember again, we saw this back in our Gittin days, that this is how you have to write a get, right? We write the location upon which the get was executed. Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, Amar Beis Rav Osai, Chayshinu L'Shnei Shviri. We have to be concerned that maybe there are two places named Shviri. Otherwise, Rabbi say, so in this case over here, so look at Rashi. Chashinu shnei shviri. Afa pi sheshviri hayadua lanu. Ein bashnei Yosef ben Shimon. Shemiyesh shviri acher. So Rabbi say, so now watch this. So now Rabbi say, so let's say again, it says, right, in this document that we find, it says that this get was executed in Shviri that is situated on the banks of the river Rachis. And it says that Yosef ben Shimon is going ahead and divorcing his wife. So Rav Huna says, we have to be concerned that maybe there are two places named Shviri. And even though in this particular town of Shviri, there's not two guys named Yosef and Shimon, but maybe there are two towns named Shviri. And therefore, again, you can't return this get because maybe you're returning it to the wrong person. So this was the position of Rav Huna, right? Rav Huna says that in general, we'll say this goes back to the motif that we saw in yesterday's daf from the day before as well. That when a document is lost, and you find the lost document, so we'll say, so in general, what's happened? The authenticity or effectiveness or kashrus of that document has been compromised. And so suddenly, we have to be concerned for things that normally we would not be concerned for. So therefore, Rav Huna says, we found this get in the Beis Medrash. Ultimately, again, Rav Huna says, we found this get in the Beis Medrash of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, I'm sorry, you can't return it. Why? Because maybe there's another city called Rachish. That is called Shviri, that is situated on another river called Rachis. And maybe in that place, there's another guy named Yosef ben Shimon. So I'll say, so therefore, Allah Lamaisa, we have to be concerned for this. So I'm Rav Chista, L'Rabba. So Rav Chista said to Rabba, Puk ayin de la'arta bay le Rav Huna minach. So I'll say, watch this. So Rav Chista said to Rabba, listen, Rabba, go out and research this, right? Go out and research this, because tonight, Rav Huna is going to ask you about this ruling. Nafak dak va'ashkach. So we'll say, what happened? So Rabbi did his homework, and Rabbi found the Mishnah. Which Mishnah? We'll say, our Mishnah. Kol ma'aseh beizin harizi yachzir. So we'll say, what does our Mishnah say? Any document executed by a beizin, ultimately again, should be returned. Now we'll say, a get is a document executed by a beizin. Right? So therefore, again, based on this, if you find a get, you should be able to return it to its proper owner. You don't have to be choshesh, right, for two Yosef ben Shimons, unless you know that there are two guys named Yosef ben Shimon. You don't have to go ahead and be concerned that there are potentially two cities named Shviri. Amrali Rav Amram l'Rabba. So Rav Amram said to Rabba, Hechi pashet mar isura mimamona. I don't understand. A case of get is a case of iser, prohibition. The Mishnah of Pashas is talking about a case of mamon, monetary matters. So how can you extrapolate? How can you learn out Isser cases from monetary cases? Amarle tarda. I suppose this, here's where it gets a little intense. Right? So Rabbi said back to Rav Amram, tarda means you're a nut job, right? Mushumam. Right? Right? You're crazy. You're crazy. Right? Eitan, don't try this. When you disagree with people, right? Always disagree nicely, right? Never call me. I know you're a good boy. You wouldn't do this, right? So the nice again, we'll say this is where it gets intense, right? So Meshumam, you're not Shtari Chalitza Miunintanan. The Mishnah speaks about again Shtari Chalitza and a Shtar Miun. Now we'll say those are not monetary documents; those are Isra documents. So we'll say, so now what happens? So Rabba and Rav Amram get into it. Right? Obviously, we'll say now, we're holding by name calling over here. Right? We're holding by name calling. So what's going on? We'll say it's incredible. Paka Arza de Rav. So we'll say, so listen to this. A beam and the base medrash cracked. We'll say, get ready for this, Gemara. A beam and the base medrash cracked. So Rabba and Rav Amram are now getting into it. Beam and the base medrash cracked. Mar Amar Mishum Lasai Didi Paka. Umar Amar Mishum Lasai Didi Paka. So both say, so now let's translate the words and let's see what's going on over here. So one of the people, in other words, says, Machlokes Rabba and Rav Amram. So one said, the beam cracked, because ultimately, again, Rabba insulted me. Rav Amram said, the beam cracked because Rabba insulted me. Right? That's Rav Amram. Rabba said, the beam cracked. Why? Because the Maisa Rav Amram contradicted my ruling. So we'll say, this is Rashi's interpretation. Look at Rashi. Mar Amram Mishum Lasai Didipaka, Bishil Mazali Shekina Al Shegidafti, Umar Amram Mishum Lasai Didipaka, Sheshbata Al Divar Levi Shin Levi Svejish. So we'll say, Rashi's understanding of the Gemara is that both Rabba and Rav Amram are claiming that the beam cracked as a sign that they were dishonored. Like the beam cracked to defend my honor. The beam cracked to defend my honor, right? So Rabbi is saying the beam cracked ultimately again because Rav Amram contradicted my ruling and he shouldn't have done so. And Rav Amram is saying, no, the beam cracked because Rabbi embarrassed me. So both say, so the Marsha in this Gemara, the Marsha says a little bit different. The Marsha says that's a very strange interpretation because then essentially what kind of each one is saying that it's my covet, my compromised dignity that caused the beam to crack. So the Marsha comments on this, and the Marsha says, So the Marsha says that no, really what they're saying is, it's not that it's my covet, but rather it's my mazel that caused the beam to crack. Okay, it's still an interesting interpretation. So I saw Bosai that the Ben Yehoyada has a totally different interpretation of this. The Ben Yehoyada says, listen to this. Nira kol echad ve'echad tala hadavar bi'atzmo kidei she'isvada ala sher haya siba lozo. So Bosai, let's take a step back for just a second. The fact that the beam cracked in the base measure, Shabbos Bosai, that indicated that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was profoundly displeased with what was happening in the Beis Medrash. That's what this is. The Ribono Shel Olam was saying is, this is not how Yidden behave. We don't call each other names. We don't attack each other. This is not what Jews do. Could Jews disagree? We've mastered the art of disagreement. But We have to learn to disagree agreeably. That's how Jews have machlokes. Machlokes and argument and differences of opinions. This is one of the most beautiful parts of the fabric of our national identity. Like we talk about over so many times, Torah tells us, Rashi HaKadosh says, when we stood at Har Sinai, we were an ish echad b'lev echad, one people with one heart. It doesn't say ish echad b'de'achas. It doesn't say one people with one opinion. Right? Why? Because one people with one opinion never happened. Never happened and never will. But the beautiful part is you could be one people with one heart, even with multiple different opinions. As long as you learn the art of respect, as long as you learn the ability to listen to the other, as long as you learn how to disagree agreeably, this is the power of Klal Yisrael. When Rav Amram and Rabbah go at it, and they go at it, and there's name-calling, and there's name-calling, and there's vicious, too vicious debate, too vicious. So Rabbah said, then the beam of the base magistrate. Remember again, Rabbah said, that beam was a pillar. When that beam cracks, that shows that the foundation, the pillar of the Beis Medrash, is cracking apart. Because when Jews can't get along, the very fabric of the Beis Medrash begins to come undone. So the Ben Yoyada says something amazing. The Ben Yoyada says that what's happening at the end of the story is Mar Amar Mishum. So Rashi's interpretation is both are claiming that the beam broke because I was hurt. Right? Rabbah says, I was contradicted in a vicious way, and that's why the Beis Medrash is kind of like advocating for my bruised ego. And Rav Amram was saying was, Rabbah called me a name, and the Beis Medrash is breaking because of my bruised ego. The Ben Yoyada says, no, it's just the opposite. They're both taking responsibility. The Ben Yoyada says, Kol echad ve'echad tala hadavar bi'atzmo, kedei she'yesvada al asher hayohu siba l'zos ve'lasos tshuva. They will say, in fact, what's happening over here, says the Ben Yoyada, is Rabbi and Rav Amram are not claiming, look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing up for my honor. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing up for my honor. No, just the opposite. Rabbi is saying, I should have never called another Jew a name. And Rav Amram is saying, you know what? I should have been a little softer when I refuted the position of Rabbi. Rabbi will say, each one is taking responsibility for their negative interpersonal behavior. And each one is doing tshuva for how they treated the other. And I will say, is this not absolutely overwhelming? Reb Mar tells us to the beam of the Beis Kibbutz, can you imagine being in the Beis Medrash? Can you imagine there's this vicious debate? There's name calling. There's, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You're enough. You're Meshulam. You're crazy. How can you bring this up? Come on, pay attention to the Beis Medrash. And they're sitting there going at it, personal attacks. And the beam of the Beis Medrash breaks. And they hear that break. And in that moment, says the Ben Yoyada, Rabbi says, Rav Amram, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Rav Amram says to Rabbi, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let's say, the only thing we have in this world is each other. The only thing we have in this world is each other. Right? Each other, and of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're one thing. We're one thing. And I would say, we can't be at each other's throats. And we can't act negatively towards each other. And we can't hurt one another. And when we do, because that happens, right, even in the closest of families, ultimately you end up hurting someone who you love. We'll say, this is incredibly important. What do you do the moment you hurt someone? What do you do? So we'll say, this is what we normally do, which is often we defend it, we double down, we explain it away. They will say, what you do when you hurt someone who you care about is you apologize. And you apologize right then and there. You own it. You take responsibility for it. You do tshuva. When you break the beam of your relationships, whether it's with your marriage, whether it's with your children, whether it's with your friends, whether it's with a fellow Jew, when you break the beam of relationship, own it, acknowledge it, and fix it right then and there. That, says the Ben Yehoyada, is happening. The moment that machlokes becomes too intense, the moment that machlokes becomes too personal, that's the moment that Rav Amram and Rabbah take a step back, say, I love you, I'm sorry, let's start this again. Incredible, incredible. So let's go back there. Matzah betisa over the luskema. So ultimately, again, if you found shtaris in a container, so the Gemara says, "My chafisa, what's a chafisa? Amara barachana, chamas kitano, a small utensil." The truth is, chamas kitano really means a small wine skin. The box that old people carry around. I guess old people, they want to keep their stuff right there, the stuff that they need more readily available. I don't know, like what do you... Whatever, old person box. Right, so lemaisa, there's got to be a better term for it. Right, but lemaisa, whatever, like a little zach, just to keep all of your stuff right there. Okay, so the idea is, if you find a document in a utensil, then halacha lemaisa, that's a simon. Okay, I'm going to say, actually very apropos, because lemaisa, simonim, right, lost objects, and simonim is going to be the topic of our next parak, which is very exciting. All right, let's go back there. So the Gemara says, tachir shal shtaros aguda shal shtaros. So remember again, if you find a bundle of shtaros, so what's talocha in that case? So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, tarabanan, kama hu tachir shal shtaros. We'll say, when we speak about a bundle or a pile of shtaros, what's a bundle or a pile? So the Gemara says, shlosha kruchin zevaze. It's three shtaros that are rolled, kruchin, karuch, right? That are rolled one into the other. The kamihi aguda, what's a pile? Kamihi aguda shal shtaros, shlosha kshurin zevaze. So we'll say, so again, just to be clear, so we'll say, tachrich are shtaros that are kind of rolled together. Aguda is a shtaros that are piled together, but tied to one another. Three shtaros that are tied to one another. So we'll say, so again, the fact that you have such orderly placement of shtaros rolled together or piled together indicates intentionality. When there's intentionality, then that by definition becomes a simen to return. Shamas Mina, what do you see from here? Kesher simenhu. Ultimately, again, that the way something is tied could be an identifying mark. Incredible. Tanya Rebichia, Shlosha Kruchin Zebozeh. If you have three shtaros that are rolled together, Ihaki Hainu Tachrich. Aye, that's the same thing as Tachrich. Tachrich, Kolchad Vechad Berosha Dechavre. Aguda Derami Ada De Krucho. So we'll say, so apparently even both of them can be cases of rolled shtaros. There are two different ways you can roll a shtar, right? Two different sounds interesting, right? Two different ways you can roll a shtar. So I'll say one way to roll a shtar is what we call aguda. Aguda means you put all the pieces of paper on top of each other and then roll them together. All right. Apparently, kruchin means you roll shtar one, then you roll shtar two around shtar one, or then you roll shtar three around shtar two, and kind of you roll them like that. All right. Two different ways to roll them. So my machris. So I'll say, by the way, if you find a pile of shtaros like this, what is it that you announce? If you find it, like, what do you announce? So the Gemara says, minyan. You go out and you announce the number, right? I found three shtaros. And then someone comes along and would say, oh, I lost three shtaros, and they were piled one on top of the other, you know, and tied together. Or they were rolled together. So my iria tlasa. So I will say, so ultimately, again, why? So therefore, why do we have to make it a case of three shtaros? If we're talking about number, afilu train nami, even two should be a simon. So elokidam ravina tiva machris hachanami sharachas. You're right. The truth is, Rabosai, in this case over here, what we just announced is, if you find this, which you would announce is, I found shtaros, plural. Then, of course, it would be up to the person to identify two things. Number one, the number of shtaros that he lost. And number two, how those shtaros were arranged, right? Were they piled and tied together? Were they rolled together? Fine. So we'll say, now watch this. So remember again, this is the other case that we spoke about before, which as we know, we'll stop over for today. Wow, tremendous Gemara. We'll say tomorrow, very exciting Gemara. We begin Eila Metzias. Right, new parak tomorrow, very exciting. Thank you, so we have plenty of time. It's a shorter, it's a longer daf, but it's easier tomorrow, so we'll make up plenty of time. Have a great day.